What do you think is the most helpful to focus on when an illness pops up?
I would let my kid go up to 105, 106. As long as there's no problems, the body's doing its job. Sugar can suppress the immune system. In an acute illness, we remove all added sugars, not even maple syrup. Your whole foods are going to be naturally rich in vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, even fiber needed to optimize your body's natural defenses. You want rich fats. Butter is a wonderful saturated fat. It can be converted into a pro-inflammatory prostaglandin, but you need inflammation in an illness.
I've seen night and day difference with when I truly slow down with them and how much faster they get better versus if I'm still trying to plug along and get things done.
Rest is huge and vital to the immune system's ability to combat whatever the problem is. Non-supplemental supports, cold, wet socks, cotton socks, put them in cold water, put them in ice water, wring them out, put them on your child's foot, and then put wool socks over that. That's going to stimulate immune circulation. Parents need to learn what the signs of emergency actually are.
Welcome back to the podcast, Nina. Thank you for being here with us again.
I am so excited to be here. Thanks for having me back.
And if you guys have not listened to the Minerals and Kids episode, you need to listen to it. It was a very popular episode. I got lots of great feedback from moms that were kind of seeing a lot of the similarities that we discussed, like in their own children, and they're very excited to do hair testing now. Today, we are going to be talking about what to do when your kid gets sick. So I personally, like I have two little kids, seeing my kids sick is so stressful. It's like one of the hardest things about being a parent, I really believe, and it can make you want to panic, put you in a very fearful state where you're making a lot of decisions from fear. And I think nothing good comes of that for the most part, typically.
And I think that's a really great place to start in understanding illness for our children, because our children respond to how we respond. And that's not, so if we're coming from a place of panic or fear, that brings panic or fear to your child, and that's not going to support their immune response at all.
Yes. And that is something I had to learn to be very careful about, especially with my older daughter, because she would have a lot of breathing problems, which we've talked about before. I've done a consult with Nina for her before. But that is the scary thing. And I grew up with asthma. So I'm like, immediately wanting to panic, do steroids, all the things. And then she would get very scared whenever she got sick. And so now I have taught her that I'm like, your immune system is like, I'm like, you're getting an upgrade. You know, it's not fun to be sick, but we all do some resting and we get lots of time together. So she loves that. And then I'm like, you're going to be even healthier after this and your body's going to be stronger. It's like that has really made a big difference. Where my kids got sick a couple weeks ago, she got over it in 2 days, which her immune system has made huge strides. Like, thank God, thank God. And she was like totally fine. And then she tried to be like, I'm still sick. Can we do this, you know? And so it's like, it's much more positive now, but I totally understand how initially, especially if you're depending on like what your history is like with your child, like it can be really scary. And a lot of times moms that are following me, I'm assuming, want to avoid a lot of the conventional approaches or have a more natural approach, but they're not sure, like, what do we have on hand? And it can be tricky to navigate. So that's really the goal of this episode, is to give you guys some tools and hopefully some mindset shifts so that you can feel confident when one of your children gets sick. Let's start with talking about the foundations. What do you think is the most helpful to focus on when an illness pops up? Like if it's your kids, what in your home, like what are you guys doing?
These are the free things, right? Before you go and have to buy anything from the store. When someone is ill in our home, we have a sick day, literally, and we homeschool. So we stop homeschool that day. I might read to them as they're laying in bed. It's a chill, calm day. If there were any plans, we're canceling them. We're staying home. We're resting. Rest is huge and vital to the immune system's ability to combat whatever the problem is. So it's a foundational recovery. Like it's an active recovery, I should say, thing that you can do for your child, because it's going to directly impact immune function. It's going to accelerate healing. During sleep and even restful periods, so it may not even be sleep, your body is increasing its ability to fight infection, to minimize stress. And all of this is essential when your kid is sick. One of the things that I like to share with parents or remind parents of is your body can only make so much energy, right? And your energy has to be diverted to different systems, one of them being the immune system. So when we are ill, we want to have as much energy as possible diverted there so that the immune system has the resources necessary to combat whatever it needs to combat. So I don't want my child, for the most part, like running around, jumping outside, doing the thing, even like school things, that's going to require energy for the brain to be used up. I'd rather use that energy instead for the immune system. So think about like, if I've got 10 units, whatever, of energy for the day, I want as much of that going to healing. We're going to rest so that these other things that my body would have used energy for is going straight to attacking what needs to be attacked. And it also just like helps, thinking about rest in general, your child to be able to be more resilient against infections or the common cold or whatever it is. So rest is vital. It's important. Again, not just sleep. It could be quiet time. It could be naps. It could be calm activities like reading. And something that could be a little controversial, this isn't always followed in my home, so know that I'm not coming from a holier than thou place, but like rest away from screens can be really helpful.
I was going to ask it. Go ahead. You go off.
So the reason that I say this is because screen time, like it's going to suppress your melatonin production. Okay. And that's what the body needs to signal to fall asleep. Even passive screen time, like watching a show, can delay bedtime and shorten your total sleep time. And that's going to be an issue for your child. So, you know, melatonin suppression, that blue light from the device, that means that we may just have delayed sleep. You may have increased alertness. So like watching something that's exciting raises your heart rate. You have psychological arousal that can make your sleep or your rest less restorative. You may even like, you just want to consider like, what are we doing to promote rest and immune support? Screens ultimately can hinder that. So you want to use that sparingly, if at all, in my opinion. What we do on sick days often is watch Little House on the Prairie. Like that is not all of the episodes. Some of the episodes are pretty wild, but like very calm episodes that are just chill. These kids are baking bread. They're going to school. They're playing, right? Something that is going to be calm, not super alert, not a ton of colors and flashing lights and like screens are changing quickly. Like that can create alertness and we want the body and the mind to rest. So that is something that can be, again, like I'm not coming from a holier than thou place. Sometimes my kids are like, I just want to watch Harry Potter while laying on the couch. And I'm like, well, if that's going to get you to stay on the couch, then today we're watching Harry Potter. Like we'll use it. But if I can sit here and read Harry Potter to you instead, that would be my preference over watching the movie.
Yeah. And I think one thing that for myself, and that it's a good reminder with the screen question, is to ask yourself, are you using the screen so that you're getting relief? And listen, it's not that we can't get relief as parents because we all need a break, but it's like, am I doing other things that don't really need to be done? When I do the same thing when my kids are sick, it's like we stop everything now. Because before I would be like, you know, I was so overwhelmed. I'm like, if I take a break from this, I'm not going to get, it's going to put me back like a week, whatever. But now I really, really focus on like, how can we, for my kids are still very small. I mean, one of them's a baby. So with her, it's different. But even my three-year-old, I try to be like with her the whole day, basically. And I'll even like lots of like cuddling and touching. And even then, like we don't even have time for screens because my kids just like to, they like to read, they like to draw, do all the things. And we'll even like, we'll color on the couch. Coloring was a good one for her that keeps her very busy. And she's pretty chill while she's doing it. But it's like, are you using the shows and the screen so that you can do other things instead of slowing down yourself? Because if they don't see you slow down, like you said, what you do affects them. And I really think I've seen night and day difference with when I truly slow down with them and how much faster they get better versus if I'm still trying to like plug along and get things done.
To add to that, thinking through when you get sick, and you slowing down and you resting, that example for them to show like they also that will help confirm or affirm what you're teaching them when they are ill as well. And so operating out of that example and letting your child know like, okay, there's this important bond between parent and child. And so I'm going to stop these other things because you're ill and you need my attention and you're your health is going to be more important than the 16 deadlines that I have, or the laundry load that needs to get done, or even dinner that needs to get cooked. Like, me sitting here and resting with you is going to position your body for faster recovery. I truly believe that, because your central nervous system calms down and then your body can operate at its best to be able to combat whatever it needs to combat, for sure.
Yes. Love that.
So what are the other big areas outside of like rest, being mindful with screens, slowing down, things like that?
So hydration's a big one. And this is going to be foundational, because oftentimes, depending on the illness, there could be vomiting, there could be diarrhea, there could be sweating. So we're losing water, we're losing electrolytes that we need. And every cell in the body, including your immune cells, are dependent on water. They rely on water. And ensuring that we have adequate hydration allows for toxin removal. So our immune cells are going to go kill whatever needs killing, and that thing becomes a waste product or a toxin that needs to be removed. Ensuring adequate hydration is going to support that process. And like, even pre-illness, like, mild dehydration can impair healing and worsen symptoms. So you want to focus on hydration before an illness, for sure, but definitely during. Adequate hydration is important for your immune response. So it's going to help transport immune cells and remove those pathogens. It's necessary for body temperature regulation. So extra water is needed to manage that fever with your sweat. With sweating and increased breathing, that can cause fluid loss. Your electrolytes, they are lost when there's vomiting and diarrhea. They're quickly depleted. So salt and potassium are really important there, and they're going to be helpful for that nervous system. And it can prevent complications, because dehydration can lead to pretty serious consequences, poor circulation, kidney problems, and even in some children, seizures. So that's something to consider with illness. Like, you want to ensure adequate hydration. And then like, your fluid amounts might depend on your child's age or weight. Just make sure they're drinking. It could be water. It could be, you know, a homemade electrolyte drink. It could be bone broth, whatever it is, whatever's soothing to them, even teas, that's going to help to ensure that they have adequate hydration. I also want to add here, you want to avoid sugary drinks. So I love being able to give my child some cranberry juice or something like that. It's wonderful, right? But when we have drinks that have excess sugar, which could be juice, it could be soda, anything like that, it's going to draw extra water into the intestine sometimes. And that can lead to looser stools or diarrhea, making dehydration worse. But we also know that sugar can suppress the immune system. So excess sugar can suppress your white blood cells from operating at their best for up to 5 hours after consumption. And so in an acute illness, we remove all like added sugars. We're not even maple syrup, maybe some honey in a tea, because Manuka honey is what we're going to want to use there. It's really great for the immune system, but that's about it, so that we can ensure that we're not suppressing our white blood cells to be able to do the job that they need to do. So stick to teas, water, adding in your favorite electrolytes, whatever is going to get your child hydrated, bone broth. And try to stay away from even like great non-added sugar juices as much as possible. And then there is like focusing on whole foods. So one of the main reasons that consuming whole foods in an acute illness being important or crucial is because you're giving your body essential nutrients for immune function, for tissue repair, for recovery. And that's going to come without added things that your body then has to like work through. So I mentioned you've got X amount of units of energy in a day. I don't want to have to give my liver extra energy to deal with whatever because I used a prepackaged food. Now, I'm not against prepackaged foods. We use prepackaged foods. I'm just saying this is probably the time to avoid them because your whole foods are going to be naturally rich in vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, even fiber needed to optimize your body's natural defenses. And to like reduce your inflammation, reduce oxidative stress, all of which are going to worsen any acute illness. So thinking through foods that are going to be rich in vitamin C and zinc and magnesium and B vitamins, they are going to drive your immune cell activity and help moderate inflammation. You want rich fats. Like, I Our family doesn't stay away from butter. We do stay away from other dairy in illness, but butter is like a wonderful saturated fat, and it can be converted into a pro-inflammatory prostaglandin, but you need inflammation in an illness. You want healthy inflammation in an illness. So I don't want to suppress that entirely. You want it to be controlled or managed. And so having good fats will assist that, as well as having good fats to bring in anti-inflammation if it gets too out of control. So a good balance between the fats that you're consuming. I mentioned fiber being really important. That's going to help feed your gut microbiome. And we know that 70 to 80% of our body's immune cells are in the gut. So if we want a healthy immune response, focusing on gut health is going to be a big part of that. Protein is huge. It gets broken down into amino acids. Amino acids are going to be used to build different immune cells, and we want them to be functioning appropriately. And so avoiding excess processed foods, excess sugar during an illness is going to prevent immune suppression and reduce toxic load, making healing a bit more effective.
Do you have like a go-to? We make the same soup every time we get sick. Do you guys have like a routine like that?
I call it poor man's soup. It's literally just like, I will cook up some chicken and broth, and that's all it is. Like, they just want broth and chicken. Maybe sometimes my husband will ask for like an egg dropped in and cooked that way. That's pretty much it. It's just chicken and broth.
I make it, we call it slop. My husband calls it slop. I don't know. He's like obsessed with, he's Puerto Rican. So he grew up with lots of like stews and stuff. And like everything is basically slop. And so he loves that kind of food. So do the girls. And I'll make like, it's just like chicken, some sort of bean, usually kale. Like, they only eat kale in soup. It's so funny. Like, if I put out on a plate outside of soup, they would never have it. And then bone broth and like a little bit of adobo. Like, it's nothing crazy. And, but it does taste, I think it's absolutely delicious. But that, like, my older daughter's like, can we make slop? Like, can I have some slop? And that's like all she ate, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And she didn't eat a lot. And I don't know how you feel about this, but like, I don't force eating when they're sick. And I know that it's very hard for my husband mentally. He's like, they need to eat. That's not how he grew up. So he's like, they need to eat. I'm like, we can't force them to eat when they're sick. We got to let their bodies do their thing.
You know, so I always talk to a friend of mine, and I told her, I have come to the realization that I now understand why moms or grandmas are like, hey, have you eaten? Because when you have a baby, like, your mind switches and all you think about is, did this child eat? Is the child eating enough? Like, that is my brain all the time with my children, all of the time. And so I completely understand the urge of like, but you didn't eat any food. And I know that you need food and you need these nutrients to be able to combat all, like, that. I completely get, but there is a place for, you could call it fasting if you want to call it fasting, or just like reduced appetite, whatever you want to call it. Like, there's a place for that because it can be beneficial in acute illnesses. And I mean, we have research with like long-term fasting and chronic illnesses. So there's a place for it. The body is also conserving energy for that immune activation. We're now taking, we don't have to expend some of our energy on digestion, which is a real energy expensive job, right? And so if the body is refusing, as long as we're maintaining hydration, I'm comfortable with my child saying, I don't want to eat, because the body's likely starving that pathogen in order to get over it more quickly.
And it's just, the biggest thing is keeping them hydrated. Because I'll say, like, you don't have to eat, or you don't have to eat everything, but you have to drink. And it's like, now she knows that. But I do think, you know, that's something that people can have a hard time with too. But I'm like, even just think about your digestion when you're sick. Like, everything's just a little sluggish. And it's like, would you want to be force fed like all these meals? And like, that's where, you know, the bone broth and everything comes in. Because it's like, you know, I cook that for like a long time on the stove. It's very easy to break down for the most part. So it's, you know, I think it can make a difference.
And I would add, like, trying to force feed a child is counterproductive. Your child's going to be exhausted. You're going to be exhausted with it. It's a battle that can only make things worse. Like, now you and your child are stressed. That's not going to help their immune response either. So if they're refusing food, it's a watch, be watchful for sure. But as long as we're hydrating, getting in some electrolytes, we're not vomiting profusely, can't keep anything down, diet, like things like that, like just watch is what I would say. And this is where I know, like, this reminds, like my husband, when I'm trying to give instruction, when he wants to cook something, I'm the cook in our home. And so he's like, how do I do this? And how much salt do I add? I'm like, you know, enough is always my answer. Like enough salt, enough pepper, not like I measure with my heart and that's it. And so this is where, like, with children, like you just your intuition, like trust it here. Like you will know if they're not eating is an actual problem or not. And like tapping into that and not ignoring or even getting that back to some degree, like you can trust your own instinct for your child. You'll know when something has gone awry.
I like that a lot. And that's kind of before we, because we're going to get into like, what can we do and kind of things we can keep on hand for different illnesses that come up. But before we get into that, and who, let me know, because maybe we want to cover this after we've talked about that, but just something that I want to be on people's minds as they start to listen to this is, how do you help parents like know when to intervene, even with the natural stuff? Because I think that that is something too, where do we need to immediately get them doing the nebulizer, getting all these herbs and stuff in? Or is there ever a time to like try to let the body run its course before, even whether you're intervening with more conventional stuff or natural interventions?
So I think it depends on the parent first. If a parent is like uncomfortable, first child maybe, what didn't grow up around children, unsure about anything with illness, didn't grow up with a parent who used natural remedies, only knows conventional, I think that that parent is going to need something to like help them feel calm, which will be beneficial to everyone. So for that parent, I would probably say start with homeopathy, which is going to be the least, maybe that's not the right way to say it. I was going to say like least intervention.
I think it's the least aggressive.
So a homeopathic remedy will like, it is going to be the least form of intervention because you're not administering a biological substance that is going to replace the body's activity or action. Homeopathy is going to empower the body's ability to work on its own, whereas bringing in nutraceuticals, bringing in herbal supports, they are like going to come help pull you along or do the job for you a little bit. So for that parent who like needs to do something to feel comfortable, I would start there. Start with some homeopathic supports. As you start to get comfortable using natural remedies, as you start to get comfortable as a mom or as a dad in parenting and a sick child, you start to know like what is a big deal and what isn't. So that's that, I think experience is going to play a role. Like maybe you're a new parent and you only have one child, hang out with a mom who has multiple kids. She'll let you know right off the bat, like, oh, don't worry about that. You're going to be fine. Kids going to be fine. But like, let them work it out, right? That I think is a also great, like having that village mentality is going to benefit everyone.
I'm just curious as like, no, I think it's really helpful. It's funny because I had a conversation with a doctor once and he was like, because I had, my younger daughter was having a lot like diarrhea, like and fever, but I don't really worry about fevers. And I didn't want to give her anything, but I wanted to get a stool sample done because she was like, it was a lot of that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? She had a little bit of blood in her stool. So I take her to the ER and they're like, oh, we're going to give her Tylenol. And I was like, no, I don't want to do Tylenol. Like her fever is not even that high, you know? And one of the doctors gave me a really hard time. And then this other guy comes in and he's like, you know, a lot of this even started because I'm like, why is it so normalized now? Like, why is it everywhere you go? It's like the immediate thing is like, oh, we'll give him Tylenol. And he was like, a lot of it's just because like parents feel like they need to do something. And so giving them something, even if maybe their fever can be beneficial, it like gives the parent something to do. And I'm like, that is such an interesting fact. And just, you know, I could totally see that.
I also think this is where my line of thinking was going. Like, parents need to learn what the signs of emergency actually are. And without having that kind of knowledge, you're left in the dark. Everything is a gray area. Is this cough a bad cough? Is it not a bad cough? Is this diarrhea a problem? Is it not a problem? Is this fever a problem? Is this not a problem? You don't know when you don't have the signs of emergency, like you don't know it or you don't have a reference point for it. So that is one thing that I think can be most beneficial to parents is understanding what are actual signs of an emergency. Like a seizure, for sure, emergency, that's obvious, right? You call 911. But I used to work at a clinic and there were tons of pediatricians. And during lunch break, I would sit in there and ask them questions all the time. And I will never forget, I remember asking a pediatrician about fevers. And this is before I was a mom. And he was like, I have moms come in here all the time with like a 99 or a 100 or a 101. And like, they're panicked. And he's like, if I'm completely honest with you, I would let my kid go up to 105, 106, as long as there's like no problems, like that the body's doing its job. And that feels uncomfortable, I'm sure, to many people listening. Like 105 sounds absurd. Yeah. But if your child, like, if they're not delirious, if they're not vomit, like if you're keeping them hydrated, if they just need to rest, I think it's something that you can be confident in watching and making sure they're okay. Now, like if you're at 105, 106 for 7 days, that might be an issue. You want to go and get checked out before you hit 7 days, right? So there's understanding that there are things you can do, but also trusting like the body has a wisdom that it was given to be able to handle all of these things. And yes, there are times where intervention is necessary, but you can just trust that the body can do what it's supposed to, because humanity has gotten this far. Even in times where like crazy sicknesses wiped out tens of thousands of people, millions of people, right? Like the body can still overcome. So being able to understand emergency signs, being able to have something that makes you confident and comfortable for your family on hand, and then being around parents who are ahead of you who can help you like discern, is this a problem? Is it not?
Yeah. I always ask my mom, she's not crunchy at all, but like no one really intervened. Like it was like, maybe we went to the doctor for being sick like once a year, you know, it's like we got sick. It's like she handled it at home and we didn't really take much for fevers. And unless we wouldn't drink, that was when she would give us something, because we were like so uncomfortable, couldn't drink or eat. But it's funny because I refer a lot to her. And it's, I feel like in this world, we go online to social media to get information. And that's when I would say, people in your life might surprise you, you know? And sometimes, like, I personally like getting that kind of advice, even though we've like, she raised us very differently than I'm raising my girls in a lot of ways. But I still learn a lot, especially when I'm like, should I be worried about this? Or is this like not a big deal? Like they had chicken pox and it was like literally a miracle. And I was like, how are they ever going to get chicken pox? Cause we used to do, my mom had a home daycare. We would have chicken pox parties, right? So just to get all my cousins come over and stuff. It was like kind of chaos when I think about it, but she was like, I like sent her pictures. She's like, yep, those are chicken pox. They're going to be good. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, there's a lot you can learn. And I know we hear like village and we think like people coming to our house and helping us, but I think more of like, who are you looking to get advice from as well? And it may not be your family, but it could be people in your life like that you trust. And I'm like, we all need people in our lives that are older than us, even if they're not related to us, to like gain wisdom from, especially as parents.
Absolutely. I still am reaching out to someone from back in Chicago when something comes up and I'm like, I don't know. Hey, Gabby, this is what's going on. What do we do? It's the best thing ever to have a connection to someone who is ahead of you. And like to give you some like gravitas to where you are, but also like tell you to chill out if you need to be told to chill out.
Yes. Which I'm always like, please tell me this is not a big deal. Okay, let's get into some of the common seasonal illnesses. When this comes out, it'll be the thick of November. So I'm sure people will already have experienced some by then. So I'm thinking of like, what would we want to have in a natural medicine cabinet or maybe a mix? I've got some over-the-counter stuff in my medicine cabinet. It could be like a mix of it with top staples for different things. I'm thinking like cold and flu. We can talk about those first because I feel like they kind of go hand in hand. And then we got to cover ear infection, right? The worst nemesis of most moms. And I think cold, flu, sinus could probably all go together and then we'll do ears separate. But what would you keep in there for things to have on hand? And I'm sure mix of homeopathy and herbs. So I'm curious to hear.
Absolutely. So for like colds, herbal remedies, elderberry syrup is wonderful, antiviral, immunosupportive. Echinacea is great. It's going to boost your immune cell activation early in illness. That's something you start at the onset. Licorice root can help soothe sore throats. And it's really great for like respiratory mucosa. So like that coughing congestion. Marshmallow root's also really good there. It's an herb to help break up mucus. You can even think about mullein. That's going to help with like coughing up the mucus, clearing mucus from your lungs. Homeopathic remedies. Aconite's a big one. Now, something I want to mention. With homeopathy, you want to pay attention to not just like a main symptom that's happening, but all of the ancillary symptoms as well. So you can have a cough and someone who's really thirsty and a cough and someone who won't take a lick of water, right? And those are going to be two different remedies. So pay attention to what else is coming on with whatever you're targeting. So aconite's great with your early stages, sudden onset for your cold. And oftentimes like fear and anxiety come up. So that's going to help you know, like, this is the one to go for. Belladonna is when you've got the cold with a high fever. And it's oftentimes like you can feel the heat on the body. There's redness in the face. Pulsatilla, thick yellow green mucus. Your child is like clingy, just wants you to hold them the whole time. That's my go-to for that one. And then there's like nutraceutical. So thinking through things like zinc, that's going to help for with immune function. It can even help with reducing your illness duration. Vitamin C, great immune defense, reduce inflammation. NAC is wonderful for thinning mucus and protecting the lungs tissues. Magnesium to like just support relaxation and sleep so that their body can do what it needs to do. Non-supplemental supports, cold, wet socks. So you want cotton socks, put them in cold water, put them in ice water, wring them out, put them on your child's foot, and then put wool socks over that. That's going to stimulate immune circulation. So we've got this sudden onset of cold at our feet. The body is going to rush blood to help warm that. And because that rushing is happening, your immune cells are circulating everywhere. So that's going to be beneficial. I love cold, wet socks, especially for fevers.
That's like the only one in your book that I haven't done.
It is. It's my favorite. It's literally my favorite.
Isn't it like do you have to be careful? Is it? It's like at the beginning, right? Like, or you can use it anytime.
I will do it each day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any day. And then, you know, you can do hydration support, steam inhalation or chest rubs are really great. I do coconut oil with like peppermint essential oil mixed in. Hypochlorous acid spray. You can even use that on sore throats if that's all you've got around. A lot of people think about it for like eczema. It's great for like cuts and scrapes and things like that. So those are probably the things that I would say are really beneficial, top tier, top supports to have on hand. And they're very similar for the ones for flu, like elderberry syrup is great. Vitamin C, zinc, echinacea, all of those are great. But then for homeopathy and the flu, ferrum phos is really helpful when it's like early on mild-ish symptoms. Gelsemium, when you've got the flu, is like fatigue and aches and pains or like feverish exhaustion. So there's different homeopathic supports that you could bring in for that one. Honey and lemon cough syrup. And that's going to be for someone over 1 year old. You can even consider a thing. Again, the warm socks are going to be great there. Herbal teas are going to be great there too. You want to promote sweating and promote comfort during that time.
If you are feeling off, exhausted, or just stuck with your hormones and your health in general, and you're like, I do not know where to begin. The wellness world is so overwhelming. I completely understand. You've probably heard me talk about minerals a million times. They are truly foundational for hormones, thyroid, metabolism, overall health, but knowing how to support them is typically where most people get stuck. Like, they know they're important, but they're like, what do I do? This is why I created my Mineral Starter Guide. It's a free, jam-packed resource that walks you through the basics of minerals, how they become depleted, how they affect our hormones, how to get them tested, and then how to actually start rebalancing them. I go through 5 very simple steps you can do without any testing. And you can grab your free copy of this by clicking the link in the show notes, or you can find me on Instagram at hormonehealingrd and DM me mineral guide and I'll send it right to you.
I love Epsom salt baths, man, when they're sick. I love putting Epsom salt. I feel like it makes such a big difference with how much faster they get better. I don't know why. Maybe some magnesium, but, and it obviously supports your liver too. But yeah, it's like, those are like one of my, other than like, you know, I do homeopathy now. I finally feel confident because I have. And the book I referred to is, Nina has a book called Primary Care Parent. It's a program too, but you can also purchase the book.
And I wanted to have the book on hand just because it's so, it's like, I hate having to look through my phone. And it's like, I just have the book and you have everything listed in there. Cause I was like, I had never really seen success with homeopathy before because I wasn't looking at all the other ancillary symptoms. And it just is, I'm like, I feel like I had to have 80 different things on hand in order to find the right one. Where when I used the primary care parent book and I was like, okay, so it's mostly like colds, coughs, sinus, like that's the things that come up the most in our home, I would say. And so I'm like, I'm just going to get a bunch of these for that. And now I like have them on hand. I know like when to use them. I know when they're working, when they're not. So that has been incredibly helpful for me. So if you're listening to this, and I think homeopathy is a little intimidating personally. I don't know why, but I just, cause I didn't see it work. And also the blends, I'm like, do the blends really work? I feel like the single ones are so much better. You know, when you see like the chest ease or the cold ones, I feel like when you find that single one that's the right one, it's so much more effective.
I have found homeopathy, quote unquote, doesn't work when we treat it like conventional medicine. Like aconite is for a cough. No matter who you are, if it's a cough, this is what you use. Where when you understand that like there's a whole component in homeopathy, you're looking at the whole person and all of the symptoms. And sometimes it's not just physical, like what are the emotional things? What happened yesterday? Like all of that is going to be part of the like symptom picture, so to speak. So when we understand that there's more than just the cough and the fever that's happening, we can choose the right remedy. And that's where it feels like it's magic. Like, how did I just give you these two little pellets or these two little drops and you're different in 15 minutes? Like, it's unbelievable. And so when you're able to case take well, when you see more than just the one thing that's bothering your child or bothering you, because I can't stand a cough that's been lingering for like 5 weeks. When you get beyond just that one thing and see the background that's also like propping that up, so to speak, then it's easier to choose the right remedy. When it comes to the like combination remedies, they're supportive, but you don't have that like magic response. And I think it's because there's so many things the body's going to try to work through when you have that blend. Now, there are homeopaths where like your body's just not going to use the one part of that remedy that it doesn't need. And that's why the blends are helpful, because you just threw the kitchen sink at them. And if it doesn't need aconite, but it only needs the belladonna in there, you still gave them belladonna. It's fine. I just think that I like the singles more than blends, but I have used blends. Like the Chestol one, I think, is one that I keep on hand for me, because no matter what, that has helped me. But it doesn't with my children. It just doesn't.
Yeah, that it did not help at all. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. But then when I really, it's like inside the book, you can see like all the different symptoms. It's all grouped. It's right there. I'm not Googling anything, you know, so it keeps me off the Google rabbit hole. But it's really helpful. And that is what kind of gave, I'm like, okay, I can actually use this. Also being patient, you know, that's the other thing. I'm like, because we all want to put a timer on it, right? Yes, you want to wait 15 minutes and see. But I like kind of had to like relax more of like, okay, is there really a shift? Or am I just kind of like being crazy and trying to control everything? And again, am I using this so that I don't have to like slow down and chill and see what's going on, and I'm trying to control and make her better quicker so I can like get on with my day? Or am I really like leaning into like, it's a sick day, we're all gonna hang out, that sort of thing? So I just think it's like having the right mindset no matter what remedy you're choosing to use. Is it's like we can't forget that, because I think it could be just like that conventional approach of like, well, her fever is not all the way better. It's like, okay, but it came down and it's improved and she's more comfortable and she's drinking, so then we like, it is working. It's not going to be like one or the other.
Yes. So that is a great like example. You may have the fever, the anxiety, the unwillingness to eat, gave the remedy, but now they're like, actually, I would like to have something to drink. I would like to eat. Like, that's an improvement. We know we're on the right track with our remedy. I always let parents know, like, if you've dosed this 3 times and you're really truly seeing no changes, then you've got the wrong remedy. We try something different. There's nothing wrong. You did nothing wrong. You're not going to hurt them by using the wrong remedy. It's just not what they needed. And that's what I also love about homeopathy, is like, you're not inducing anything unless a child isn't sick and you're trying to make them sick, kind of thing. Like, you can have those kinds of responses, But that's not what we're using homeopathy for. So it's an easy, in my opinion, it's like, it's an easy place to begin. As long as we know at the onset, you're not just looking at one thing. When you've got the bullet point of things to like consider, it's so easy to choose a remedy and then watch. And again, the slowing down is so important. Like, this is where I truly think like sickness and parenting, at least as a mother, like this makes me really like settle in to be a mom and nothing else. Like, yes, this is an inconvenience to me that you are ill. It is true. But I don't want to treat you like an inconvenience. I want to care for you, and I want to care for you well. And so these are opportunities that I think expand us and expand our mothering in a good way.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm glad that you pointed that out. Okay, the next one, ear infections. Is this, for me, in my life, with our clients, with people, like friends, family members, I would say ear infections are probably... ear and sinus are probably the number one reasons that I see kids taking antibiotics. And I'm like, if you, with one of my nephews, I'm like, you got to figure out the ear infection thing. I'm like, here's some stuff that you can try. And because my younger daughter, like she had a bunch of them, but we did antibiotics one dose and she had like a huge immune reaction. It was terrible. And I was like, well, I guess that's not an option. So I got to figure this out. But it was good. It was like good for me to be like, no, like, again, I was scared. I was making a decision from fear. I was really nervous because it had been going on for a few days. And if I had, it forced me to figure out like what works for her. And everyone's going to be different. Every child, like in what exactly works for them, is going to be different. But what are some things that you're like, would, if that is a concern for you, ear infections, maybe that comes up a lot for your child. What would you have someone keep on hand?
Okay. So I want to say this, like there's a lot of fear around this one, right? Hearing is so important, and it's sensitive. And I've had the like spectrum of experiences as a mom with a child that we did like literally like nothing. We just watched, see how your body handled, and one where we're like, no, we need an antibiotic. So I've got the spectrum here. I just want to like encourage parents again. Well, this actually the first thing I would say have on hand on Amazon, you can get, what is it called? Dr. Mom Professional Otoscope.
Yep. I got that from your book and I was like,
it's the best thing ever. It is. So that little, it's the thing that your doctor uses to look in ears, and on the case that it comes in, it gives you reference pictures of like what you are looking at, what you want to see, what you don't want to see. There it is. Yes, that's the one.
You're on YouTube. Here it is. It shows you right on there, like what you want to be looking for. And it's going to look, each kid's ear is going to look a little different. Both of my kids' ears, their non-infected ears look slightly different, but it's like, you want that pearly white eardrum. And I was like, oh, this is so helpful to know.
It is. And the reason that I'd say this is where you want to start to have this on hand is because when an ear infection comes, you want to make sure that that eardrum has not been perforated, because you don't want to put eardrops in there if it has. And so going in blind is not going to be beneficial to you as a parent or as a for your child, to just put stuff in there and hope that it's going to help if it's too late to do those kinds of things. So that is the number one thing that I would say have on hand with a small child, that you can make sure that your next step is the right one. So if we don't have a perforated eardrum, then we've got some options that we could bring in. So there's the garlic mullein eardrops. Herb Farm, I think, makes them. I've used that. You can do internal supports as well. So you can give that orally. St. John's wort is really great. Garlic is really great. An ear onion poultice. I do that all the time when they've got ear pain. It really does like feel better. And so all you're doing is baking half an onion and then put a cloth over it and hold that up to the ear. Like, you don't want it burning hot, so maybe let it cool a little bit. But like, you just, all you're doing is holding a cooked onion to the ear, and it helps to reduce pain and inflammation. You can do gentle lymphatic drainage massages around the ear, down the neck, to promote the fluid drainage out. Warm compresses over the ear, that's going to help with pain. I would avoid dairy and any mucus producing foods here, because mucus is going to thicken, which can worsen blockage there. Hydration is important there, but you want to pay attention. Like, if you see the perforated eardrum, that might be worth going in, checking in with your doctor, making sure that moving forward with an antibiotic is still okay. If there's high fever with that ear pain for a prolonged amount of time, if there's drainage or discharge coming out, If you're seeing neck stiffness, if you're seeing confusion, if your child is under 6 months, those are going to be some of those emergency signs you want to pay attention to. But at home, like we're using homeopathy. Chamomilla is a big one. Pulsatilla is a big one. Heparin sulf is a big one. Aconite, belladonna, all of those can be great homeopathic supports to have on hand to start right away at the onset of any ear pain.
Yeah, I have found especially for the pain, I feel like the homeopathy is really important. And then, I mean, the garlic mullein eardrops and the internal, when I use both, it's like, it'll be gone. I've never done onions because my older daughter hates onions and she's like, would freak out.
They're the best.
I know. I haven't cooked with an onion in years. I was joking to my husband the other day. I was like, I'm going to try to bring onions back soon. She's been eating like basically everything. So I'm like, I think we're past the picky stage, but probably not. That's like my go-to, and just making sure she doesn't get too congested. Like the humidifier in the room, as soon as one of them is sick, it's like, it's going in the room. At night, it makes, for us, it's made a huge difference. And then because it's that congestion, it gets, especially when they're little, I feel like it gets to the ears so fast.
So yes, I remember reading about this maybe a year or so ago. A child's immune system, especially under age 2, super immature. And so you have different parts of your immune system. Your innate immune system is like this barrier. It's going to just try to block things or make you cough it out. Sneezing, that's that part of the immune system. The ear is one of the easy places to encapsulate and hold something for a child in illness. And so this is why a lot of kids are often prone to that, because the immune system hasn't matured enough to do something else. And so it's trying to hold it and hold it somewhere. And we don't have the proper drainage function under the age of 2. And so it just gets held there. And so again, helping with like drainage supports, lymphatic, like all of that is going to be key. And this is just part and parcel with the fact that you have a tiny human living in your home. Like they're just not developmentally there where there's going to be great drainage.
Yeah. That, and I think that's an important one to know, especially when they're teeny tiny, of like, because a lot of moms are like, I didn't plan to use antibiotics. I really want to delay it as long as possible. And especially like under 2, that specific time frame. And I'm like, you have to have the knowledge and have the tools on hand. Otherwise, what's your gut? And like you think I'm going to bring them to the, not that I'm saying the doctor's bad. We had an amazing pediatrician in North Carolina. We just moved to Florida and I'm like, I've been looking for one here and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just probably not going to be the same. He was not functional or holistic, but he was more holistic minded. And he was like, oh yeah, no, we're just going to wait and watch. You know, I mean, I have the otoscope and I haven't brought my kids for ear stuff ever since then because I've been able to resolve it at home, but only because I'm checking. So I know, like, that's the other thing. You have to like get tools like this so that you can know, is this the right thing? Otherwise, you're just going to be stressing about it the whole time of like, should I bring them? Should I not? Should we do an antibiotic? Should we not? So I think that's where having the knowledge and the tools comes in. So that's huge. And we already kind of covered fevers, but I'm curious, anything with sinus infection that you've seen be especially helpful?
Yeah. So some herbal supports. I think it's Earthly that has Sinus Saver. Wise Woman Herbals has Sinus Cleaner. And that's going to just help congestion. It's going to help lymphatic drainage. A neti pot, a saline spray. Those are going to be great for clearing mucus. I also you can place like peppermint oil on your upper lip. Vitamin C and zinc, elderberry, echinacea. So you're going to hear a lot of the same things coming up over and over. This is like a clue. Those are the things you want in your cabinet because they're so versatile. For homeopathy, definitely want to look at like the symptom picture. Arsenicum is a good one. That's when you've got like burning, watery discharge and your kid's just restless. You might have Nux Vomica for sinus congestion with a headache. There's another one, Cali Bichromicum. I think that's how we pronounce it. Thick, stringy nasal discharge. So you're paying attention to the color of the discharge. If they're able to get it out, is there a fever? Is there anything else? Warm compresses are great. Head elevation sometimes can be really helpful. And then just avoiding inhalant irritants. So maybe we don't go to grandma's house who has plug-ins when we have a nasal sinus issue, right? So anything like that. And then just like my favorite kinds of nasal sprays. So you've got saline, you've got rinses, you can do X-Clear. Any of those are going to be helpful to clear out what's going on in the nose and then like stay on top of it. Like this is something you have to keep doing regularly to try to manage without any conventional supports.
And that is one, I think you recommended that Beekeeper's Natural one for Eliana back when she had that. My older daughter, she was like literally a year ago and she had sinus congestion. Then it went to her eyes. And I was like, oh my God, Nina, what do I do? And you're like, try this one because we thought it was viral and everything. And it worked. So I have, and it's funny because like each kid has things that work better for them. Do you find that?
Yes.
They get the same kind of symptoms whenever they're sick. Like Eliana, I know like certain homeopathy blends or homeopathy types work for her. The nasal spray always works. And I know that your stuff that works. But Amaya's like a little bit, she's just a little bit different. It's funny.
My children, when they all get a cold, one of them, I just want herbal tea. Like, can you just make me tea? And it's just like some honey and squeeze of a lemon. That's all he wants. And he is good. Like, rarely am I like, no, we also need to give you XYZ. My daughter, she's dramatic when she's sick. She's the clingy one that I'm pulling out the clingy homeopathic supports for. And then my other son like tries to push his boundaries. Like he doesn't want to rest. I'm like, you need to sit down. You need to. So that's the one where I'm like, if you watching Harry Potter is going to keep you on this couch, that's more important than not having a screen on. So definitely different things for different children.
I know it's in like that. I think that's the thing that builds your confidence. So let's wrap up with, or I'm like, I might save antibiotics for Patreon just because we're getting close to an hour. So we're going to wrap up here, but thank you so much for being on. If you guys want to hear the rest, we're going to talk about like how to know when you should actually use antibiotics and other options. And then I have all my Patreon members submitted some questions based on illness stuff. We have a few questions on RSV, strep, things like that. So if you want to hear Nina's answers for all those, you can join us over patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. But thank you so much.
Thank you.